I like to think that this research is going to help make Minnesota's legislation the very best in the country in terms of ensuring rural access for both employers and for workers. And I think that that's going to be then creating a new model for the rest of the country.
This is Civios, your source for public affairs research. A podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
In this episode, we will be talking with Deb Fitzpatrick about her work in creating economic stability for rural families, employers, and communities during family and medical leaves. Deb is the co-director of the Center on Women, Gender, and Public Policy at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs here at the University of Minnesota. Recently, Deb was named an unsung legal hero by Minnesota lawyers for her work as head of the Infinity Project, which is a scholar-led group committed to getting women judges seated on the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Congratulations on that award, Deb, and thanks for coming to talk to us about your work in rural Minnesota. At the beginning, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the Family and Medical Leave Act. Can you provide us a summary? What does it provide and what doesn't it provide?
So the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, or the FMLA, as many people refer to it, was passed in the mid-90s, and it's really the only major piece of legislation that governs kind of leaves that people might need to take from their employer for three major reasons. The first is a serious medical condition that they may have. The second is leave to bond with a new child, and that could be a baby, but it could also be a foster child or an adopted child. And then the last category is time that people need to take away from work to deal with family care. So that could be anything from caring for an older parent down to caring for a child with cancer or a spouse that's facing a major medical situation. So that law has now been in effect for about 25 years, and it's been helpful in some important ways. It really provides that protection for people who need to take those leaves for up to 12 weeks. So during that time frame, they're eligible to come back to work. But it also has some really critical limitations. And I think the first of those is that it's unpaid leave. And so for a lot of workers, they really can't afford to be away from work for that kind of length of time, even a week or two for most families, and receive no pay. The other major limitation is that because of eligibility requirements and other aspects of the law, about 40% of workers in the country aren't covered by it at all.
So can you talk a little bit, Deb, about your own personal experience with paid family and medical leave?
Yeah, so I think I'm very similar to a lot of people. I think one of the things that's really important to acknowledge when you think about those three kind of broad categories of potential need for leave is that for most people, I've had some experience with this. In my own case, I'm the mother of two children. Like many, many families, when my oldest child was born, I needed to sort of cobble together existing sick leave and vacation leave and savings to be able to take the 3 months that I was able to take off when that child was born. And so, like many families, it wasn't ideal. It was a struggle for us and, you know, left me without any time to take my child to the doctor. If anything else had happened, you know, I wouldn't have had any time off to deal with that. So I think it's important to see that while, you know, many families are figuring it out on their own now, that often has significant financial ramifications for individuals and their families when they need to be taking one of these leaves. And, you know, for many people, these are really important times in their lives. You know, when you have a new baby, you should be able to really have that time to cohere as a family, to do that important work of learning about each other and learning how to be a parent. many of the other sort of uses of this kind of leave are also really important times in people's lives when, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, when a parent is dying, for example, that, you know, these are some of the most important times in people's lives. And unfortunately, because of the nature of our current policy landscape, many, many families face a lot of, on top of, you know, kind of the normal stresses of these major life events, are also facing some economic stresses, which adds to the situation.
So where does Minnesota sit in relation to other states or countries in terms of family-friendly support like paid family and medical leave?
Most states in the country do not have any provisions that provide pay during these kinds of leaves. But 8 states provide some pay during medical leave. 6 states, plus the District of Columbia, now provide some kind of pay during both medical leaves and family leaves. And so Minnesota is one of those states that hasn't yet addressed this kind of challenge that families are facing in terms of being able to care for themselves and their families and have some economic security. You know, of course, the rest of the world has had this, you know, situation kind of figured out for a long time. And in every state in the United States where they have addressed this issue and in the rest of the world, the dominant model is a social insurance model. And that just means that workers and employers are paying into a government-run fund. And then that government-run fund is paying for that wage replacement while that worker is on leave. And that really takes some of the burden off of employers while also providing economic security to the worker.
Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to focus on the rural aspects of this policy area?
I've been working in this area with the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development and Minnesota legislators for about 5 years now. And a huge part of that work has really been about thinking carefully about how Minnesota can design the most efficient and effective program possible. And that really, I think, requires having a deep understanding of who the workers are in our state and what their needs are, who the employers are in the state, how our economy functions, and then really mapping that onto what we know about how these programs have been constructed in other places. And so I have, over the course of those 5 years, really honed in on where we know there are current disparities in terms of access, and understanding and trying to understand what's driving those disparities currently, and then what does that imply about how we design a program in Minnesota to meet everyone's needs. And so the rural angle was pretty obvious because there's been a lot of great research showing that in many ways our rural communities currently have less access to supports, paid family leave in particular, paid family and medical leave in the context of this study, at the same time that in some really important ways they actually have greater need for taking these kinds of leaves. And so it seemed like in order to really fulfill our goal of creating a program where everyone is sort of contributing financially, but also everyone has the opportunity to access the program and benefit from a program, that we really needed to understand more deeply what was going on to create less access and greater need.
So how do you see this research affecting the policy process in Minnesota?
I think it's going to be really carefully considered by the legislature as they look at the legislation that's going to be proposed in 2019. They'll be looking, rural legislators in particular, I think, but all legislators who really, you know, do see themselves as trying to create programs that benefit everyone in the state, regardless of their zip code. And so the research really helped to lay out some key considerations that legislators could look at in terms of figuring out how to create a program that is going to address rural disparities. And so you know, those types of decisions that are going to be made, I think this report will really help legislators think through some of the trade-offs that they are going to be making in terms of this policy design.
So, Deb, you mentioned that employers in rural places are less likely to offer these benefits right now. What did you learn then about how this policy should be constructed to address the needs of the employers?
Yeah, so, you know, we often talk about the benefits for workers, and they're significant. Just to tick off a few, we know that when people have access to pay while they're on these types of leaves, it strengthens breastfeeding, bonding with babies, it increases the, you know, economic well-being of families, it increases women's workforce attachment, infant brain development, it helps, you know, dads bond more with their children, which has lifelong effects, it increases vaccination rates, helps seniors stay out of nursing homes, it helps people of all ages heal better. On the other side, it reduces infant mortality and racial health disparities, premature births, you know, variety of kinds of inequalities. It reduces infant care costs and family instability. So there's a lot of things that we know from around the world and from the states that have these programs now about how these things help workers. But there also is a lot of concern about how we balance the needs of workers with the needs of employers, and particularly small employers. So when we did this research, many of the stakeholders that we talked to were small employers. So we talked to, for example, a young woman who has a bakery in southern Minnesota, and she has 10 employees now, and she's also pregnant. And she is really struggling with how, as a small employer, what she's going to do for herself. You know, she's in this situation where her other workers are depending on her as the owner, and she's not just an owner, she's there baking the bread with everybody else and making sure that the bakery is running well. And without this kind of program, she's struggling to figure out how she's going to manage when she needs to take her maternity leave, when she needs to take leave with her baby. And then she also talked a lot about how she's struggled to keep employees, how she's struggled to attract employees to come and work in her bakery because she can't offer similar kinds of benefits to larger employers, particularly in urban areas, metro area of the Twin Cities. So the way that these social insurance models work is that, as I mentioned earlier, workers and employers are paying into the centralized fund. And so if we had a program like that in the state of Minnesota, small employers would be able to have their employees accessing that fund when an employee needed to take a leave, or they themselves needed to take a leave. And that would free up resources to hire temporary workers, to pay overtime for existing staff. So in her case, she had some workers that might be able to step in while she was on maternity leave. But without this kind of financial support from a fund, she would not be able to have the resources to pay another worker to work overtime and fill in for her while she was on leave. And at the same time, she talked a lot about how she could see this kind of a program leveling the kind of benefits plan field for her. So if we had a state program in place like this, as it is true in some of the other states that have one, that would allow her to offer basically, you know, similar kinds of basic benefits to other larger employers in other parts of the state or in the metro area. So actually, there's been some great survey work done that with small employers that show that this is kind of the most effective, or they view this approach of a social insurance model as the kind of model that would have helped them the most. And so since in our rural communities we have many more smaller employers, I think crafting a program that helps level the playing field as well as kind of shares the costs and benefits across all of the workers in the state would be especially beneficial to those rural communities and their workers. And I think another thing that came out in some of the interviews that was really interesting to me is that in small communities, also when someone needs to take one of these leaves and they don't have access to resources, can have a really much more crystal clear negative impact on Main Street. If a family doesn't have money to, you know, to buy bread to pay the rent, that can have a much more destabilizing economic effect, not only on that family, but also on that community, because that community is much smaller and everybody's contributions to the economy matter a little bit more. And so for a variety of reasons, I think that having a program, again, that's geared towards sharing the benefits and the costs across the entire state would have a disproportionately positive effect for small businesses in general, but especially those in rural communities.
So I'm curious, we've talked a lot about maternity leaves, but we also know that the state of Minnesota, and especially in rural communities, there's an aging trend. And I'm wondering, where did you get the information about paid leaves as it relates to this demographic reality that there's an aging population?
Yeah, so we obviously had a lot of conversations with various stakeholders in rural communities as part of this analysis, as part of this study. And we know that, again, this is one of those issues that is driving greater need in rural areas, that those areas are aging faster than other parts of the state and other parts of the country. This is true across our country. And what that has led to is situation where more and more families are grappling with how to support older family members who may or may not be in living next door like they might have in a different time. This is particularly true in rural communities where younger families, younger children have left those rural communities and gone to work in the Twin Cities, for example. And so it's extra challenging for them to be able to provide that support. Minnesota has actually been a national leader in terms of helping more seniors, more elders age in place, stay in their homes. And that's true across the countries. But the consequence of that is that we've shifted a lot of responsibility onto families. Most of elders who are aging in place do need support from family. And especially, again, in rural places, their children who may live in the Twin Cities can't just go down the block and do that care. They may need to take a day or two to go and help with the yard work and to help take their parents to medical appointments, to be there after a medical procedure to take care of their parent. And so that really increases the needs of both the children who are trying to be there for their parents, but also those parents. And, you know, what we heard a lot of is that workforce shortages in rural communities mean that there's fewer and fewer paid caregivers available to fill the gap as well. And that as well is putting extra pressure on families to kind of step in and help their parents and loved ones survive and thrive as they age. And so we know that these kinds of programs have been shown in other states to reduce the need for nursing homes. And as I said, Minnesota has been a leader in terms of moving people out of institutional arrangements and helping to keep them in their homes. And a program like this would just be one more tool in the toolkit, I think, to help with addressing what we know has been termed the silver tsunami and other terms to signify the aging. And again, this is a more prevalent problem in rural communities. And so another way that this kind of program needs to be designed to help address that particular situation for rural families.
So what's next? What should we expect to hear about this work?
So legislation, you know, will be proceeding in the 2019 legislative session on this front. And I like to think that this research is going to help make Minnesota's legislation the very best in the country in terms of ensuring rural access for both employers and for workers. And I think that that's going to be then creating a new model for the rest of the country. Other states will be looking, I think, to Minnesota. And of course, hopefully Minnesota will be reaping the benefits, particularly rural Minnesotans will be reaping the benefits of a program that has been carefully designed to consider their needs.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Civios, an initiative of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. To learn more about this segment, please visit civios.umn.edu.